Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Scorpio Labor of Hercules. We have quite a few people here today, and I'd like to just say hi to you all, to Yvonne, Linda, Kay, Nicole, Teresa, Risa, and Victor. Thank you very much for attending. I also got a couple of advanced questions, so we've got a lot to go through today. As normal, I want to talk a little bit about the web noise protocols. Please keep yourself on self-mute to minimize the background noise. If you have a question, we don't have any little hands in this particular version, but you can speak up or you can send a little note in the chat. And I've got a couple people helping me here, so we can make sure we catch everything from you. If you do hear any echoes, please, the first thing you do is check. Put yourself on mute and see if that will stop it. Okay? So, let's begin. This is something we've seen before. I go through several different versions of this, alternating every couple of months. But we actually study the myth of Hercules because it shows the progression of a disciple as illustrated in the heavens. By the labors of Hercules through the zodiacal signs, it is as though God had pictured in space his plan. The plan for the working out of the evolution of the human spirit. But progress isn't just limited to disciples. We all can better understand the lesson of each sign by reading about Hercules' journey through the signs. We all have every sign in our chart. Some signs may be better represented than others, but they are all there. We start off learning about the lower expression of each sign, and eventually we begin to face the lessons that Hercules did as he recapitulated for us his symbolic journeys. Hercules starts each one of his labors by facing the presiding one. The great presiding one, enrobed in radiant calm, said but a single word. The teacher heard the golden command and summoned Hercules, the son of God, who was also the son of man. The light now shines on Gate the Eighth. Beside the river Amemone, the festering swamp of Lerna stands. Within this noisome bog, the monstrous Hydra lies, a plague upon the countryside. Nine heads this creature has, and one of them is immortal. Prepare to battle with this loathsome beast. Think not that common means will serve. Destroy one head, and two grow apace. Expectantly, Hercules waited. One word of counsel only may I give, the teacher added. We rise by kneeling. We conquer by surrendering. We gain by giving up. Go forth, O Son of God and Son of Man, and conquer. The stagnant swamp of Lerna was unbelievably rank. The stench polluted the atmosphere for miles around. When Hercules approached, he had to pause because the smell was so overpoweringly bad. The oozing quicksands were a hazard. More than once, Hercules was almost sucked down. At length, he found the monster's lair in a cavern of perpetual night, but the Hydra lay concealed. By day and night, Hercules haunted the treacherous area, waiting for the Hydra to emerge. In vain, he watched. Finally, resorting to a stratagem, Hercules dipped his arrows in burning pitch and rained them straight into the cavern. The Hydra, its nine angry heads breathing flame, finally emerged. Large and ugly, the monster seemed to be made of all the foulest thoughts conceived since time began. The Hydra sprang at Hercules and sought to coil about his feet. Hercules stepped aside and dealt it such a crushing blow that one of its heads was immediately severed. But no sooner had this horrid head fallen into the bog than two grew in its place. Again and again, Hercules attacked the raging monster, but it grew stronger, not weaker, with each assault. Then Hercules remembered that his teacher had said, "We rise by kneeling." Casting aside his club, Hercules knelt, grasped the Hydra with his bare hands, and raised it aloft. Suspended in midair, its strength diminished. On his knees, then, he held the Hydra high above him. That purifying air and light must have their due effect. The monster, strong in darkness and in swampy muck, lost power when the sun and wind fell on it. Convulsingly, it strove, a shudder passing through its loathsome frame. Fainter and fainter grew its struggles till the victory was won. The nine heads drooped. Then with grasping mouths and glazing eyes, they fell limply forward. But only when they lay lifeless did Hercules perceive the mystic head that was immortal. Then Hercules cut off the Hydra's one immortal head, and he buried it, still fiercely hissing, beneath a rock. Returning home, his teacher told Hercules that victory is won. The light that shines at the gate 8 is now blended with your own. Okay. So that was the summary of the myth. We see from the meaning of the myth that Scorpio is a triple sign, and Hercules had to do three things. He had to recognize the existence of the Hydra, search for it, and destroy it. Now, there were actually variations of this myth, as there are with all of them, but for the first time in our study of Hercules, we no longer have a statement by Master DK to guide us with the kernel of truth behind all the various legends. The myth for Scorpio, as well as the remaining four labors, is described to us in the Labors of Hercules book by Francis Merchant. And I actually got some questions on this particular part of the myth. Several of them, as a matter of fact. One about the nature of the immortal head, and one about how many heads there really were, 9 or 10, and one about burying it under a rock. So let's look at these points. although he didn't provide any insight in Labors of Hercules itself, of course, Master DK has given us plenty of information in esoteric astrology. And in there, he tells us that there were nine heads, and they equated to the nine tests of Scorpio. Down much further in the myth, this is explained a little better for us by Francis Merchant. Hercules had to see the Hydra as one monster, not a beast with nine different heads. As long as he sought to sever the heads one by one, he remained unsuccessful. When he finally dealt with it as a unit, that was when he gained his victory. So, was the immortal a tenth head, or was it just the true head that was veiled by nine heads of illusion? And when the illusion couldn't stand the light of day, which of course is the Scorpio light, then the real immortal head appeared. Now, let's stop and consider here for a moment. Which part of us is actually immortal? The immortal head could imply that every difficulty, however terrible it may appear to be, contains a jewel of great value. No attempt to dominate the lower nature and discover that jewel is ever going to be futile. Our soul is immortal, and at times our personality may seem like it is too. It dies with each life and is resurrected with each new incarnation. Right where we left off, continuing the process of evolution and serving as a conduit for the soul. In the myth, Hercules cut off the head and buried it under a rock. And we're given the phrase, hidden under the rock of the will, to consider. We can see it as the immortal head being the concentrated energy in all those thought forms that created the monster in the first place. Remember up earlier we were told that the Hydra was made of all the foulest thoughts conceived since the beginning of time? It's a thought form, but it also represents, as we see on the slide here, the three physical tests, the three astral tests, and the three mental tests. Let's see what we've got here. So, the monster...
Hang on, I'm putting my earphone.
Okay, I'm in the middle.
Okay, I'm set.
Thank you. Okay, let's see. I'm in the middle here of this, so let me just continue. Let me see. We can see it's the immortal head being the concentrated energy and thought forms that created the monster in the first place, and that they still remain. Now they're purified and redirected, but that power must be continually controlled and rightly channeled. And then the will of the soul can use it as its source of power. In other words, the will of the soul here is burying the form, burying the personality, and keeping it from rearing its ugly head again. It's finally putting it to rest, as the nine tests of the personality have been passed, and the disciple has learned to channel that inherent energy rightly now. Now let me see, I think... Okay, I've got a little note here from Risa that what we're looking at here when Hercules is burying his head under the rock, we're looking at the combination of Ray 1, the will, Ray 7, which is the mineral kingdom or the rock, And then Ray 4 is the human kingdom that's in the middle between the first, the highest, and the seventh, the lowest. So what we're seeing in this particular sentence is all the different kingdoms that are working together as Hercules is burying this head of the Hydra underneath the rock. As with anything else we see when we read Master DK, when we look at the lessons here of Hercules, the labors of Hercules, they have a variety of meaning on the physical plane, on the astral plane, and on the mental plane. So, I'm sorry, I can't quite hear you. Can you speak a little louder?
Okay, how about now?
Yes, thank you.
Is that better?
That's better, thank you.
Maybe if I could add a point to your, to the immortal head that you are mentioning here. I agree with Riza about the immortal head being a part of the Ray 4, the human kingdom. But within the human kingdom, we actually the human kingdom is, on a macrocosmic level, the Agnishvatas, the solar angels, and their home is on the fourth Buddhic plane, which is ruled by Scorpio. And so the immortal head may represent the jewel in the lotus, that a point of Buddhi, which is for us the spirit aspect. So after the disciple has gone through all its tests and nearing the third initiation, that's when the will aspect starts to manifest itself. But it can't manifest itself until a desire has been completely transmuted, or more or less transmuted into will, which is the spirit aspect. The Buddhi must compose of more than 50% or close to 75% of all the vehicles for Buddhi to completely manifest. Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And you make the point, or you enhance the point, that Francis Merchant was trying to make when he basically said, however terrible it may appear to be, it contains a jewel of great value.
Yes.
And that no attempt to dominate the lower nature and discover that jewel is ever futile. So thank you. Thank you for adding that. Okay, let's see. I had another question here on the number of tests, and their race, let me see. 9 tests and their relationship to transmute, 3 physical, 3 emotional, and 3 mental problems. So let's get into that a little bit here. There were 9 heads of the Hydra. The task assigned to Hercules had 9 facets, and each head of the Hydra represents one of the problems that besets the advanced person who seeks to achieve mastery of himself. 3 of these heads symbolize the physical appetites associated with sex, comfort, and money. The second group concern the passions of fear, hatred, and desire for power. The last 3 heads represent the vices of the unillumined mind, pride, separativeness, and cruelty. So let's go through the first 3, the physical tests. Sex is an energy. It can be inhibited, unrestrainedly exercised, or sublimated. Repression is no true solution, and promiscuity course in life. You know, it's the same with every single duality that we have. There's two extremes to it, but we don't want the extremes. We want to balance the duality, and then we want to learn to blend it. And that's what Francis Merchant is talking about here. Sublimation involves the use of the energy of sex in a creative endeavor. We're not inhibiting it. We're not going overboard. We're using it creatively. To what extent can human energy be redirected? Seething energy can be transmuted into aspiration. Drives and compulsions of human nature, so transmuted, become a beneficent creative power. The second one was physical comfort, life conditions selfishly appropriated. An external sense of dissatisfaction spurs the man to ever greater heights of achievement and want of comforts to go along with that position. It clogs down, the person's clogged down with possessions. I mean, think of these hoarders. We all have those reality shows that show these people with so much stuff in their house that they can't even navigate. Think of that, clogged down with possessions and blunted by the beguiling sense of comfort, the spirit begins to wilt and fade. The prisoner of comfort sinks back in apathy, forgetting the struggles and trials that spark the spiritual pursuits. Money, selfishly cornered, is also a problem. The accumulation of money is a master passion that lies behind the activities of many people and nations, but money is nothing more than the concretization of energy, stored and hoarded rather than being used constructively. Ethical and human values are disregarded in the mad endeavor to gather power-conferring gold. Inevitably, choices are determined by money considerations rather than spiritual convictions or ethical principles. The urge to accumulate wealth is insatiable. No matter how much a person has, he still avidly craves more. A crippling effect of this form of mental distortion is self-centeredness. The individual suffering from this affliction often wishes to receive everything but to give nothing. The state of the universe is determined for him by what he succeeds in acquiring. He regards himself as a terminal point and acknowledges no responsibility to confer on others the benefits he himself has received. Hopefully, the urge to acquire material goods may someday be transmuted into the desire to amass knowledge and the will to acquire jewels of the spirit, and then the passion to give them freely to others in need.
Maybe Biel, if I could add a point here.
Yes, please go ahead, Nicole.
Seeing that Scorpio is a water sign, so we can see that sex, money, and comfort relates to the sacral, and more particularly to the astral sacral of the personality. And so this is what we need to balance on the astral plane. We need, as you said earlier on, we need to blend, not destroy, but to blend both polarities, both extremes, and walk the razor-edged pathway between the two extremes of the astral sacral. Thank you.
Right, thank you, thank you. And I see a note here from Brisa that if we just look at what's happening in the world around us today, every day on TV, on the news, We see something that's involved with each one of these things. Things having to do with money, things having to do with sex, things having to do with hate, with pride, with cruelty. It's just rampant. But what that's doing, and this is another Scorpio thing, is it's bringing these problems to the light of day so they can be addressed. They're no longer hidden. Back in the Victorian era, which relatively speaking wasn't that long ago, these things would be hidden and no one would talk about them. But that's not the case today. And that's because humanity as a whole is beginning to deal with them.
And as humanity is heading for its first initiation, so we can see that the astral realm is beginning to be controlled. But as you said, going from the physical to the astral, there is a period of transition where all the astral issues regarding sex, comfort, and money, as well as the others that we're going to see, hate, love, and ambition, etc., are moving from the subconscious into the conscious, where it's being raised and aired so that it can be addressed, and therefore the right direction being envisioned. Correct.
Right, and that's exactly what Hercules did. He raised the Hydra in the air. He brought it to the light of day. Thank you, Nicole. Okay, let's go to the astral ones. Fear, which conditions activity today. These illusory shapes perplex and frighten people, hampering their efforts. Many people cower when haunted by the fear of ridicule, failure, the unknown, old age, even chance and death. Can these fears be eliminated? The experience of Hercules suggests that they can be overcome by raising consciousness to a higher point of integration. When a person's life is refocused about a higher purpose, the threatening shadows of fear are pressed back to the periphery of thought. As long as the intermediate monsters of fear prowl in the subconscious, they will have the power to turn the heart to ice. But we have many examples. A soldier intent on defeating the enemy risks life itself. A mother snatching her child from danger forgets her own fears. A motorist hurtling down a highway at a breakneck speed jeopardizes life and limb just for the sake of adventure. These people have focused their attention above the point where fear is found. The spiritually oriented individual has centered his thought at a level that is too rarefied for fear to reach. Hate is a factor in conditioning relationships. Hate is rooted in negation. It is the opposite of desire for union. Raised to a higher dimension, hate is transmuted into the repudiation of all that is unreal. We saw that hate is one of the hindrances to union. And we know that ignorance is the main hindrance from which all the others stem. So through study and knowledge, we gain a wider perspective that allows us to overcome hate. Upon the lower arc, it assuredly is destructive, but upon the higher, when thoroughly purified, it may be seen as the obverse side of love. Now, I had a question on this particular sentence here and the meaning of it. I like to think of it as a coin. And coins have two sides, heads or tails. The head sign of a coin is the adverse, while the tail side is the obverse. Both terms, of course, indicate opposite sides of the same kind of polarity. This is what we were talking about a minute ago. Duality. Balancing it. And then blending it. So what Francis Merchant is actually saying here with this sentence is that hatred is the flip side of love, but they are both part of the same coin. And once hatred is purified, we realize that. Francis Merchant goes on to say in this particular labor that when hate is divested of all emotional content, it can become an energy that causes a man to reject the form for the sake of the life which it animates. Wow, now that's really an interesting phrase. And here is where we see the tie-in of Scorpio with death, which is just the transition from life, one lifetime to prepare for another. I believe it's in Esoteric Healing where DK tells us that sooner or later we will learn to consciously abstract our essence from the physical form when the body is no longer needed for this particular lifetime. There will no longer be any fear or hate of death. It will be seen as a normal function to do this. Isn't that an exciting concept to think about? Nicole, I know you're very familiar with esoteric healing. Do you have anything you can add to this?
Yes, and this whole section here of hatred, desire for power, and fear is basically the astral base of the spine chakra issues. And as we know, the base of the spine is related to Ray 1 and Ray 7. That's where the soul anchors itself into the physical realm. But on the other hand, that's where it extracts itself. And as you were saying, death, the will of the soul, extracts itself from the physical realm and goes back home. So this is very much related to death, as you were saying. And the attitude that we need to change is the fear of death. You're quite right. And DK is very, very emphatic about this, is that we need to change our attitude and to focus ourselves onto the spirit aspect rather than the form, instead of fearing death, which is being completely obliterated, meaning consciousness, as if that we are going to go and be buried in 6 foot under. But 6 foot under is not our home. Our real home is the spirit world. So we do need to focus our attention far more into the soul realm, where the soul resides. So you're quite right in that particular sense. And seeing that the soul is all about love, so the hatred is very much the opposite of love. And in this particular case, we see the interaction between head and base chakra here, vying for for the consciousness to be focused in. So here we really need to focus into the head, which is the entrance and the exit of the soul in the physical body. Thank you, dear.
Oops. Yeah. Thank you. Sorry. The last one of the astral tests is ambition. This is the desire for power. During the past few hundred years, man has released the energy of power far more than that of love. This follows right on what you just said there. The result is an imbalance, which we've been talking about. Power, when unrelated to love, is a corrupting force. Many tragedies in human relations result from the uncontrolled desire to dominate the lives of others, to prescribe and regulate their conduct. Why would anybody do that? But lots do.
Well, that's right.
He who substitutes...
Sorry, BL.
No, go ahead.
I think that's because the chakra is the consciousness within that particular chakra is dominated by the energies of the devic lives that make up that chakra. That's why. And the consciousness of the soul, which who we really are, is buried and is completely overrun by the consciousness of the of these devic lives.
In other words, the head, as you were saying earlier, is not running the show.
Yes.
So he who substitutes power considerations for ethical principles, and lots do, endangers perpetual strife. The high ideals that have served as beacons over the centuries, like brotherhood, cooperation, idealism, are buried under the corrupt power that is rampant in society. And again, every night we turn on the news, we can see that. Every one of these nine bullets in the newscast. When transmuted, however, the will to power becomes the will to achieve and the will to sacrifice. The harsh, self-centered will is transformed into a distributing agent of beneficent gifts. Then power serves love, and love glorifies that power. Okay, I don't see any questions so far, so I'm going to move on to the third, the mental tests. Pride, which is intellectual satisfaction, making the mind the barrier to soul control. The walls built by pride incarcerate a man more securely than prison bars. Fastened by the heavy chains of self-exalting thoughts, he looks at other human beings with condescension. Thus, he weakens the link.
Condescension.
Condescension. Yes. I was trying to think, isn't that what I said? That's what I meant to say. Thank you. Condescension. Thus, he weakens the link that binds all men together in indissoluble brotherhood. Setting himself apart, he steps further and further beyond the circle of human sympathies. Hercules falls to his knees as he struggles with the Hydra, symbolizing in this posture the spirit of humility that must be attained. The exaltation of personality inclinations must be replaced by the expression of self-sacrificing tendencies. Separativeness, which is the isolated attitude and which makes the mind the barrier to right group relations. Boy, don't we see a lot of this right now. The analytical mind divides and subdivides, prizing the part above the whole. Greater emphasis is placed on the indications of diversity than on the overarching fact of unity. Such fragmented thinking hampers the thought of synthesis. The separate attitude is more conscious of the difference between men than their similarities. It conceives of religion as a series of antagonistic units rather than a single expression of spiritual impulse. It considers the opposition of classes in society to be more important than the common humanity that makes men brothers. it views the earth as a series of disparate nations rather than one world. Hercules had to see the Hydra as one monster, not a beast with nine different heads. As long as he sought to sever the heads one by one, he remained unsuccessful, as we read earlier in the labor. When he finally got around to dealing with it as a unit was when he finally gained victory. And the last of the mental tests is cruelty. Satisfaction with personality methods that make the mind the instrument of the sense of power. The satisfaction that men experience in hurting others is testimony to the existence of the evil tendencies that corrode the mind. Delight in causing suffering to our fellow men is a disease. This ugly head of the Hydra must be destroyed once and for all before man can declare himself to be humanized. When this monster, cruelty, is held high in the air in the light of reason and compassion, it loses its power. The task of translating the energy of cruelty into that of active compassion still remains. In two tests, Hercules killed when he should have loved. But in Scorpio, he achieved this transformation, rooting out of his own nature a tendency which would have crippled him in every future undertaking. So slowly but surely, we learn, just as Hercules is learning. And we've seen these nine forces that all of humanity is eventually going to have to face. Hercules had to redirect them and transmute them. Problems arise out of the misuse of the energy known as sex. We see that everywhere we look. The love of comfort, luxury, and outer possessions still grows rampant. The pursuit of money as an end instead of a means enthralls the lives of countless men and women. Thus, the task of destroying the first three heads continues to challenge the powers of mankind, thousands of years after Hercules accomplished his extraordinary feats. The three qualities of character that Hercules had to express were humility, courage, and discrimination. Humility to see his plight objectively and recognize his shortcomings. Courage to attack the monster that lay coiled in the roots of his nature, and discrimination to discover a technique for dealing with his mortal foe. Hercules invokes a brighter light than that of the analyzing mind. He seeks to raise his problems to a higher dimension, not to stir endlessly in the cesspool of the subconscious. Endeavoring to see his dilemma in the light of the soul, he confronts it from a new angle of vision. By doing so, he breaks the Hydra's grip and eventually subdues the beast. Such is the achievement of Hercules. Psychologically speaking, in this labor, he had admitted light into the dark recesses of the subconscious, grappled with the monstrous forces that wallow in subliminal slime, and has overcome the enemies of his own household. A cleansing process has taken place, and Hercules is now ready to embark upon the next labor in which he will have to demonstrate his ability to control the powers and the potencies of the mind. So, any comments on this before we move on to the next slide?
Yes, BL, I see that the three physical tests, the three astral tests, and the three mental tests are really the really represent the dweller on the threshold. Before the third initiation, these three tests must be completely taken, over subdued, and as you say, then ready for the ascent or the grip of the soul and the monad or the spiritual triad. So basically it's solar plexus, base, and sacral issues that need to be looked at, transmuted, purified, so that the soul can have a complete grip of its personality.
Right, thank you. And I'd like to explain, we've got several fairly new students here, so I'd like to explain. I'm not sure if they're familiar with the dweller on the threshold, but you know, we just talked a minute ago about Hercules' task was to clean his own household out, clean his own mind out. He built up all of these bad habits, bad thought forms in his own mind. He created the monster, and he had to slay that monster. And that's what we do when we face that dweller on the threshold. We face ourself and that entity that we created over hundreds or thousands of lifetimes as we stumbled along as a little personality and made all those mistakes. So thank you very much for clarifying that, and as always for bringing in the chakra associations with it. Okay, let's move on here. All right. The journey that he took. As we see, these tests are really all about extremes, the good side versus the evil side, just as all pairs of opposites are to be at one in this particular great sign. This is the sign of the conscious disciple who has to integrate all of those aspects of himself. I want to distinguish here between the ordinary people who are on the counterclockwise wheel of the zodiac and disciples like Hercules who are on the reversed wheel. He has reached such a state that he's now going through the signs in the correct order, learning the lessons in the correct order. Not all of us are so lucky. We're still struggling along, maybe going through the signs in the wrong order. So we might get to be the boss in Capricorn without having learned some skills that make us more of a human being than a tyrannical boss. So we all have different levels. We're all at different levels, and we need to keep that in mind when we're looking at the labor here, the work that Hercules is doing, and when we're considering our own life and what stages we're at there too. Hercules, in this particular labor, was told to find the nine-headed hydra that lived in the stench-drenched bog. This is the monster that dwells within each of us in the caverns of our mind, in the murk and mud of the unlit mental recesses. It can be quiescent at times or burst forth in a tumultuous frenzy. Its existence is not easily discovered. A long time passes before we realize that we are nourishing and sustaining this monster within us. The burning arrows of flaming aspiration must be discharged before its presence is revealed. Now, in some accounts, Hercules actually burned off the heads rather than raising them in the air. I'd like to point out that the mind is actually related to fire, and the final tests of his were all mental in nature, destroying the illusion once and for all. So the fight begins, only to find out if you destroy one head, another grows in its place. Every time a low desire or thought is overcome, another takes its place. But Hercules, remember, he did those three things. He recognizes the existence of the Hydra. He searches patiently for it and finally destroys it. Discrimination was needed to recognize its existence, patience to discover its lair, and humility to bring the slimy fragments of the subconscious to the surface and expose them to the light of wisdom, that light of day that Scorpio was famous for. As long as Hercules fought in the bog, amid the mud, slime, quicksand, he was unable to overcome the Hydra. In all humility, kneeling in the mud, he had to examine his dilemma in the light of wisdom and in the elevated atmosphere of searching thought. From these...
BL?
Oh, I'm sorry, yes.
Sorry, BL. Could I interject here? And I thought the other point that this myth brings up is really listening to the soul. Here we see, as he was struggling in the bog, because he realized that, you know, as he cut off one head and another two regrew, then the myth says, then Hercules remembered what his teacher had said. We rise by kneeling. So I think that when we need to apply the same lesson that Hercules is learning, is that he listens to the soul. He listens to the wisdom, as you were saying, the wisdom of the soul, and then applies it.
Right, exactly. And I think it, you know, Francis Merchant doesn't go into that, but I think that's one of the aspects of the discrimination. But you're exactly right. He had to stop and listen to what his teacher told him. And that teacher represents the inner voice.
That's right.
The soul talking, and that's exactly what he did. And it was only then, when he did that, that was all that mental process. You know, he had to stop and go internally to find that. Yeah. Of course, the whole thing is the mental process, because we're talking about the caverns and the slime and the muck that's there in the mind.
That's right. But not the lower mind, but bringing the light of the higher mind or the soul.
Into it.
Into it.
Right, right. Thank you. He had to translate his problem into another dimension in order to solve it. The light of wisdom in the elevated atmosphere of his searching thought. Only when a new focus of attention is achieved can a new perspective be established. And this, of course, is that Ray 4 problem of achieving harmony through conflict, of facing the problem of finding yourself in battle with two different sides of yourself, until you can step back, gain a new perspective, and then everything shifts for you, and you are able to translate the problem into another dimension. It's exactly what you're talking about there, Nicole.
Yes. But we also see that the problem of the Ray 4 is to be in that midpoint, to be, you know, as a soul, to be standing there as the point of stillness within, which is the soul, and then raising the form then into the air, raising the lower mind to the higher mind, raising the emotion on the astral level to feelings and to love. And to, if we want to use, then the third aspect is to raise the form into spirit, to will. So it's that fourth ray position, that midpoint, which is really crucial in this myth, I think.
I agree. And that's actually the point that Risa made for us earlier when talking about burying the head. You know, the head was the will aspect, the burying it under the rock was the mineral aspect, and humanity was there, the human kingdom there in the middle. And that's exactly, you know, between the two, and that's exactly what you're talking about here. So we have all of these different correlations if we understand enough to realize how rich these myths are for us. Now, if we look at this Scorpio labor from certain angles, we see that for a long time, we personally have not triumphed over the Hydra because we're not to the level, at least I'm personally not, that Hercules was. Most of us are occupied with the futile methods that he tried at first, lopping off one head only to find two more grow back. This primarily is humanity's problem, but individually we are so profoundly concerned with our own particular evolution that we forget the larger view. If we are ever going to climb that mountaintop in Capricorn, we must lose sight of the personality and begin to function as souls.
That's right.
There was a really interesting part in here where Alice Bailey talked about her highest moments. She knows theoretically what her attitude and action should be, but she goes muddling along anyway. Why? Because of a fundamental law that everything in nature evolves sequentially, step by step, line upon line, precept upon precept. It might be a devastating experience to quickly clear up a personality that allowed the whole force of the soul to pour in. A person would be swept off their feet by the power and the light, by the omniscience and the omnipotence of the soul, and they wouldn't know what the heck to do with it. Can you imagine just all of a sudden having that energy flood you? This does not mean that we sit back and let the law work. We're not just sitting there waiting on evolution to happen and to carry us along until some time we're going to achieve. Sooner or later, we are all going to face that battlefield, the Kurukshetra that Arjuna faced. And we have to deal with this Hydra in Scorpio, or whatever the battlefield ends up being. For this is the labor which is engrossing humanity today. The true Scorpio test never takes place until one is coordinated, until the mind, the emotional nature, and the physical nature are functioning as one unit. That's the personality, the coordinated personality. Then man passes into Scorpio, where his equilibrium is upset. Desire seems rampant when he had thought that he had gotten rid of it. He's fluidic, and he had thought he was balanced. This is exactly what you were talking about a minute ago, Nicole, with the fourth ray and balancing it and not being upset by one end. It is, in fact, a balancing act. And we may have dealt with all of these issues earlier in our evolution, but when the test of Scorpio comes forward, we've got to recapitulate all of them. All of these things are dredged up that we thought had been buried or overcome. so the mind that Hercules was quite sure was beginning to control his personality stops functioning. Remember the three things the disciple has to do in Scorpio. He has to demonstrate, not to the hierarchy, not to the onlooker, but to himself, that he has overcome the great illusion that matter, form, cannot hold him any longer. This is what you were mentioning earlier, Nicole, about the dweller on the threshold. He faces himself. Hercules has to demonstrate to himself that form is simply a channel of expression whereby he contacts a great field of divine manifestation. From reading some books on religion, one might come to the conclusion that form, emotion, and mind are all evil, undesirable things to be gotten rid of. But if we get rid of the physical form, we have no means of contacting divine expression, because God is in all humanity in the physical, tangible world in which we live. And if we have no form, none of our five senses, then we're shut off from God in those physical forms of expression. The personality is not to be killed, not to be stomped out. It's to be recognized as a triple channel of expression for the three divine aspects. All depends on whether we use the triple personality for selfish or divine ends. The great illusion is the utilization of the personality for selfish ends. To sum up the whole story in the sign of Scorpio, the self is determined to kill the little self in order to teach it the meaning of resurrection.
And perhaps, BL, if I could rephrase that sentence, because I really don't like the word kill, because it does say up there, you know, the personality is not to be killed.
It isn't, right?
No, you know, because in my mind, the dense physical body of the Logos, which comprises of the fifth, the sixth, and the seventh plane, is a divine expression. And therefore, it was never in the in the big picture, in the mind of the Logos, to kill it, but on the contrary, to save it, to love it so much that it will raise it to a higher level of divine expression. And because this these divic lives of the mental, the physical, the astral and the physical come from the first solar system, where the form was nurtured by Virgo, and Virgo is all about protection and nurturing and loving, and it loves that not only the form but the life that the form was meant to be protecting. So it's all a labor of love, really. So if I can really change the wording, so to sum up the story in the sign of Scorpio, the higher self is determined to love and to subdue the little self and to transform the little self in its own higher vibration in order to bring the little lives to a higher vibration. That's the way I would love to transform that sentence.
Yes, and it's all about transformation, and it's also about the little lives, as you mentioned, because of course our worthy indwelling spirit of the physical form, but the physical form is made up of all those little devic lives, and they don't evolve on their own. They don't have a consciousness and evolve as we do. And so when we evolve, what we're doing is we're transforming the matter that we're made of, and we're making it more rarefied. And so we're actually transforming those divas and raising them up on their level. So this is a it's a process that we're doing that's helping those little lives as we transform ourselves. So thank you very much. Very, very good points.
This is the purpose of the Logos. The purpose
right?
of the Logos is for us, the human kingdom, is to transform these little lives.
Right.
So in a way, we are co-creators with the planetary and the solar Logos. So us as souls, this is our job, is to raise the vibration of these little lives. So I think that's a very important point to for us to remember.
It is. Thank you. Thank you. And now that we've got off the term kill, I would like to talk about death. there are three death signs in the zodiac. The three great deaths take place as we progress around the field of life. In Cancer, we have the death of the elemental being, namely man, in order that the human being can come into existence. Right through the zodiac, we can say, here is death, in order that. It always brings something new. There's always that resurrection, that phoenix rising from the ashes, that is a symbol of Scorpio. Always death is an entrance into a fuller life, a fuller experience, a fuller realization in scope. It is the death of the personality in order that the soul may take over the personality and express life through it. In Pisces, we have the crucifixion, the death of the world savior, because he has perfectly fulfilled his function. Death in astrology may mean many things. Perhaps it may mean that we are going to die. That's one interpretation. Perhaps we're going to die to an old emotion. Some crystallized, long-held ideas and dogmas that have governed our activities until now have simply come to an end, and we wonder how we could possibly have thought as we did. That particular line of thought has died. So it's valuable to get the big picture and learn to interpret it in the various aspects of the personality. Okay, so that was the journey. Now let's look a little bit. We're running way late, but let's look a little bit at the sign of Scorpio. It is a water sign, as are Cancer and Pisces. As we just heard all about, it's about conflict, test, trial that ends in triumph. It's points of crisis, moments of reorientations, and its turning points in the life of humanity and of the individual. Its polar opposite, that which it has to balance, is Taurus, an earth sign, which represents both desire and the growth of the soul light. The rulers of Scorpio, exoterically, both Pluto and Mars, and esoterically, Mars. The key words for Scorpio, from the angle of form, let Maya flourish and let deception rule. But from the soul angle, warrior I am, and from the battle I emerge triumphant. It's a water sign, and esoterically water is emotional, nurturing, and conforming. But it also may be too sensitive. The keys are purification and identification. Cancer is the purified waters of experience and identifying with the masses, Scorpio is the purified waters of test and identifying with the hierarchy. Pisces is the purified daily life and identification with the spirit. The water signs, like the earth signs, are feminine in nature. That means they've got yin energy. They're passive, they're receptive, they're containing. They represent the night. They're related to the 2-4-6 ray line. Now I see a note here from Risa reminding me that Cancer is on the 3rd and 7th line. Yes, of course it is. But it is still a water sign. It carries these tendencies, as do all water signs. And its rulers, its two rulers, the Moon is a Ray 4 planet, and Neptune is a Ray 6 planet. So it has the energy there, this 2-4-6 ray line energy. Just as Pisces, which transmits both the 2nd and 6th rays, Pisces carries a Ray 1 component with it because it's associated with Pluto. So nothing is, of course, cut and dried. You can't say, well, it fits in this little box here and it doesn't exceed that little box. That's not true. But overall, the water signs have these characteristics.
Yeah. BL, maybe if I could add here that we are in a Ray 2 solar system, which means that it's the 2-4-6 line which is absolutely emphasized. So even though some of the constellation transmit on the 1-3-5-7 line, but it's the 2-4-6 line which is actually being built, being emphasized in our solar system.
Right. Thank you very much. I want to say that both the water signs and the earth signs, they are compatible signs. They don't necessarily get along with the air and fire signs, but the two of them get along and they work out their issues via the axes relationships that they have, and also through trine and sextile, which are favorable aspects. Okay, now let's look a little bit here. The fixed signs, they are steadfast, stubborn, determined. Don't let anybody ever call them inflexible, though, right? They work out their issues as all squares do via, or all crosses do via the oppositions and squares, which we consider to be hard aspects. I would also like to say that I don't necessarily like the term of easy or hard, softer, hard aspects. The easy ones sometimes we take for granted, and what we need is the hard aspect to give us that swift kick in the rear to get us up off the couch and motivate us to do something. So aspects have their purpose. Esoterically, the activity of the fixed signs involves soul development and control. Taurus is developing the soul light. Leo is developing self-mastery. Scorpio is resolving conflict and duality to overcome desire and illusion. And Aquarius is developing group awareness and world service. The synthesized axes eventually work out the Taurus-Scorpio axis, using the wisdom of the light of the soul to overcome desire through right thought and right action. The Leo-Aquarius polarity, self-mastery leading to group awareness and selfless world service. So let me see. We've looked at each time the progress of the signs. We went through the 4 preparatory signs. We are right now at the last of the 4 physical plane struggles, overcoming illusion in Scorpio. Next, we'll begin the 4 signs of achievement, when we hit Sagittarius. If nobody has any further comments, I would like to thank everybody for showing up and to tell you that I hope to see you at the next one that we'll have, which will be on 7 December. So thank you. And I'd like to say goodbye to everybody.